Big dairy companies and national organizations backed by them have long been pushing the benefits of milk to the public through ads and commercials. Remember the long-running Got Milk campaign? That's probably the reason you're familiar with the claim that calcium helps build strong bones.
And one source of revenue these companies have always relied on through the years was school lunch programs. But our next guest says finding the balance between supporting agribusiness and feeding healthful meals to kids is a challenge that hasn't quite been solved yet. Peter Robison is a writer for Bloomberg News and Bloomberg Business Week magazine. He specializes in long-form features and investigative articles. He wrote the piece headlined, Big Dairy is About to Flood America's School Lunches with Milk. Peter, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, before we get into this back and forth over the last few years on milk, you might think, okay, school lunches, we start off with the best science on nutritional information and we build our school lunch plans around that. But you say there's a lot more local, regional business and politics that goes into it. Give us a little bit of the broad background there.
That's a really good way of framing it. I got into this story because I was fascinated when President Trump's pick to be Agriculture Secretary, Sonny Perdue, about a week after he was confirmed, went to a school in Virginia and said he would be changing the school meal rules that President Obama had set, and he made a point of saying, I wouldn't be as big as I am today without chocolate milk. And Sonny Perdue himself had been a grain trader. That's where he made his fortune, and he was a consultant to milk producers. And we wanted to really dig into how things end up on the school lunch tray. And what we found is that businesses like dairy wield a lot of influence, and they wield it in part through a group called the School Nutrition Association, which represents lunch ladies, but it also gets a majority of its revenue from big food companies, companies like Land O'Lakes, like Domino's Pizza, like PepsiCo. So the story tried to show, just as you said, that there's a balance between nutrition and the interests of agribusiness, which, of course, want to sell their products.
Let's dig into the milk story now. Obviously, an important issue here in Wisconsin. We hear about low milk prices for commodity producers, gluts of milk, in some cases cheese. What has happened with milk and other dairy products in school lunches in the Obama administration, now in the Trump administration?
One thing the Obama administration did, which might not seem like a big change, but it's been noticed by industry, was that the Obama administration said that if you served chocolate milk, it couldn't be 1%. It had to be skim. And they also required that water be available at every meal. So it sort of edged out this pride of place that milk has had for a long time in school lunches. And what the industry was finding was that some kids just didn't like the taste of skim chocolate, so they were drinking less of it. And Milk Pep, which is the national trade group which was behind the Got Milk ads, you know, found that kids were the source of the biggest volume drop from 2011 to 2015. So this was a change that they wanted to make happen.
Now, you tried to look at some of the arguments over nutrition. What did you find when you looked at the premise that milk of whatever sort is healthy stuff for school kids?
People have this, it's almost folklore that you know, milk is calcium. But increasingly, studies have found that it may not be the bone protector that you think it is. There was a study done in Sweden that found that the people who were drinking, you know, three glasses of milk or more a day, compared to those who drank less than a glass, were actually more likely to die. And they also found that those people weren't any less prone to bone fractures. That was just one study, but there have been others that have found something similar.
And milk might be fine for many kids, but you also looked at, for a lot of people, depending on their genetic background, lactose intolerance might be a real obstacle to wanting to drink a glass of milk with lunch.
That's another thing, and it's something that's not widely understood if you're of Northern European descent, because genetically, Northern Europeans are able to process milk more easily, but around the world, a majority of people are not able to easily process milk, and it's not as popular in Japan, and that among Asian Americans, you know, being lactose intolerant is about as common as being right-handed, and yet our school meal programs require milk to be offered. It's the only food that's required to be offered, you know, food or beverage of any kind that's required to be offered to kids.
Talking to Peter Robison with Bloomberg News, talking about his piece on school lunches, the political influence of agricultural producers and dairy in particular. Peter, the dairy story in schools doesn't end with the milk that kids drink. There were sodium limitations put on under the Obama administration, and that started to have a spillover effect, right, on other dairy products.
That's right, because cheese is high in sodium, and another way that the dairy industry was about to be squeezed by the coming restrictions that had been set under the Obama administration was that the sodium levels, which had already dropped under those rules, were going to drop again, and they were going to nearly drop in half by 2025, and that was a big, according to, you know, food consultants I talked to, that was a big deal because that was going to severely restrict the amount of cheese. I mean, one person I talked to described it as kind of a cheese apocalypse. You'd have, you know, macaroni and cheese, cheeseburgers. Those would just not be on the menu as much. And so this easing of the coming sodium restrictions was something that the School Nutrition Association had pushed for, and it was something that they got.
Now, at the core of a lot of the arguments over schools is, okay, great, you put healthier food in, but are kids going to eat it? It is possible to make high-fiber, low-sodium, low-fat food that tastes good. It's really easy to make those kinds of foods that taste bad. What are we seeing when it comes to whether kids are eating the healthier, theoretically healthier stuff that's being put in front of them?
You are seeing some improvements there. Initially, when the changes were made in the Obama administration, you had a lot of the kids. The industry wasn't ready for the changes, so you had a lot of bland meals being served, and you had kids posting pictures of their terrible meals. But there were signs that has been improving, and in many school districts that I talked to, they said what was planned is just fine, and they were going to continue. And there were waivers that were offered to different schools that allowed them to serve more white breads or other kind of specialty or other meals that they thought would be palatable to kids.
Now, take us to right now under the Trump administration. What are the guidelines for schools when it comes to their school lunches?
Right now, it's not. I wouldn't call it a rollback or a change that should make parents deeply concerned. What's happened is that the progress that had been made has been halted, but it has changed in the fact that 1% chocolate milk is now allowed, and the improvements that had been planned are not coming. The other change that we haven't talked about is in grains, that the Obama targets had required 100% of the foods to be whole grain rich, and the new target is 50% whole grain rich. So that could mean more pizzas, more white breads.
Now, when I look at one kid's lunch, it doesn't seem like a big deal. When I look at all the kids in the country's lunches over an entire 180-day school year, it starts to add up. Can you talk about the kind of money that's at stake in these issues?
It's a lot of money. It's the National School Lunch Program is about $13.6 billion a year for the milk industry. It's one industry source I found is that it's about 7.6% of all total fluid milk sales that comes from these feeding programs, as they're called, and that's and the thing about it is that it's a steady every year source of revenue at a time when the industry is really under pressure because people aren't drinking as much milk. I talked to the guy who came up with the Got Milk ads, and he said, he kind of threw up his hands and he said, I don't think a millennial is ever going to drink a glass of cold milk.
Can you talk about the lobbying that goes on from different sectors of the agriculture industry when it comes to setting these school guidelines?
Well, the lobbying comes through meetings and comments. The rulemaking is made, and then industries are allowed to write in comments, and a group like the School Nutrition Association has really had Sonny Perdue's ear. The president of that group began meeting with him very soon after he was confirmed, and Sonny Perdue went to their annual meeting after he had announced the changes, and was accepted as someone who had the industry side.
I want to take a last minute for a unique event. I think it was that same annual meeting of the School Nutrition Association. I had no idea this goes on. Directors of school lunch programs around the country go to this convention and talk about how the companies try to sell them on stuff.
Yeah, it's an amazing sight. You go to this annual meeting, and it's thousands of lunch ladies, for lack of a better word, so cooks, cafeteria managers, and they attend meetings about the requirements in school in lunches, and it is quite complicated, the regulations, but they also hear something called a culinary demo, and in these demos, it's an opportunity for the food companies to directly pitch them. I went to one where that Land O'Lakes had hosted, and a sort of Food Network celebrity chef named Jason Smith talked about recipes that they should consider, and lo and behold, they were all cheese recipes: cheesy cowboy meatball hoagie, Cuban mac and cheese sandwich, cheesy peas salad. He said, "Girl, get your head in that bowl and lick her clean when it's done." He was just a charming guy who had people in stitches, and ultimately it was about making sure cheese has its place on the lunch tray.
Peter, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
Peter Robison is a writer for Bloomberg News and Bloomberg Businessweek magazine. He wrote the piece, "Big Dairy is About to Flood America's School Lunches with Milk."